Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM Potential Future Enhancements in Tivoli Storage Manager conference call. Today's conference is being recorded, and now at this time I'd like to turn our call over to Mr. Dave Cannon. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, everyone. My name's Dave Cannon. I'm an architect for Tivoli Storage Manager, and today we'll be talking about potential future enhancements in Tivoli Storage Manager. Just a few preliminaries let me go through. We will be holding questions until the end. And I'll point out that the presentation is available both for IBMers as well as for business partners. Hopefully you've all been able to get a hold of that. If there are follow-up questions after this presentation, the primary contact will be Tricia Jung. So her email address is given at the beginning of the presentation, and please contact her. This presentation is not intended to go over everything that is planned in the future, but to focus specifically on selected areas that may be of special interest to our customers. And so it's not going to cover everything, but we'll take a little bit deeper dive into selected areas. I'll point out that the slides that you have are non-confidential. So this information can be shared with customers. However, from time to time, I may make comments that are confidential in nature, and I will I'll point that out, that the particular information is confidential and can only be shared outside of IBM or with somebody under an NDA. If we go on now to slide, slide two is a standard disclaimer as we talk about potential future enhancements. And we need to point out that the things I'm going to discuss, of course, do relate to futures and as such are subject to change. So there's no commitment from IBM that these will be delivered as described, and certainly no guarantee that they will be delivered on any particular time schedule. That said, I will try to give an idea of the current thinking as to when these items could potentially be delivered. And we've really broken these down into two different groups. With each of the items I discuss, you'll see one of two indicators. It will either say next release candidate, and that means the next release after 5.5, which just became available, or it will say future candidate, which means they're being considered for some release further out in the future. Now, I'll make a comment that is confidential in nature. When I refer to next release candidate, I will try to do that consistently, but I may slip from time to time and actually refer to that as 6.1. And in fact, 6.1 is our next planned release. The name of that release, 6.1, is considered to be confidential. So if you're talking in a with customers who do not have an NDA, please just refer to it as the next release. Also, the date for that is currently scheduled for December 2008. So we're just over a year away from having that become generally available. And that date is also considered to be confidential. Beyond that, the future release would be somewhere out in 2009 or beyond. Okay, so with that introduction, we'll go on to slide three. These are the general areas that we'll be talking about. We'll be talking about database enhancements, which really involves replacing the existing database with DB2. We'll talk about enhancements for management of stored data, improved administration, and then some things that we're considering with regard to security and compliance. So with now on slide four, this is an introduction talking about the changes to enhance the current database. As I believe you're probably all aware, TSM has had a proprietary database for the entire life of the product, which is now over 14 years. It's a very good database. It, in many regards, it is similar to a relational database. It has excellent technology in it, much of which is came from Ulmiden research and has been portions of that technology have also been implemented within DB2. That said, over the years, we've gotten many requirements to continue to enhance the database. And so we have been faced with a decision, should we continue to enhance this proprietary database to satisfy customer requirements for scalability and availability and various features and functions, or should we replace that with a commercial database such as DB2? And about 2 years ago, we took a very careful look at that, had some very detailed studies. We consulted with customers, with various groups within IBM. And after quite a bit of evaluation, we reached the decision that we would replace the existing proprietary database with DB2. And that decision was really based on a number of factors that are shown at the bottom of this slide. The primary evaluation criteria were really centered around customer value. We decided it didn't really make sense to replace the database unless doing so would add some customer value over time. And so we looked at customer value in four areas: availability, scalability, performance, and ease of administration. Those were the primary considerations. And then we also considered secondarily factors such as cost of ownership, reporting and monitoring, the impact of the upgrade, and what the cost would be to development. And after evaluating all these, we reached the decision, as I say, to go to DB2. If we go on to slide 5, then, this gives a little bit more information about what that really means. Basically, beginning with the next release, the TSM server will require the use of DB2. So there will not be a capability for a dual mode where one gets to choose to use DB2 versus the proprietary database. So with that upgrade, it will be DB2 only. Now, that said, of course, we will continue to maintain prior releases that have the proprietary database. And, in fact, the support time may be extended for those releases to ensure that customers have adequate time to make the transition from the current database to DB2. We recognize that that transition will require some care and some thought, and so we don't expect that customers are going to go off and do that immediately. It will take some preparation. And we continue to have ongoing consultation with customers about this and to have them assist us in evaluating the things that we're going to be doing. Now, if we go on to slide 6, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through a number of different areas that relate to the transition to DB2 and go into those in a little bit more detail to help you understand what the expectations are as we do that. And the first of these areas is availability. This is probably one of the primary reasons, it is one of the primary reasons why we decided to go to DB2. Over the years, we've gotten quite a few requirements for various capabilities in the database that would improve availability. One of the big ones is the ability for online reorganization. And that is something that is available today in DB2. So by going to DB2, that capability would automatically become available. Additionally, some customers have had painful experiences where they have had to audit their database, and that is an offline operation that disrupts the TSM server operations for a considerable period of time. And we have wanted to avoid the need for that. By going to DB2, we will eliminate or greatly reduce the need for an offline database audit. So how are we going to achieve these things? A little bit more detail on that. Of course, we will exploit the online reorganization. DB2 has built-in capabilities for validation of referential integrity, and that will be done real-time. So we'll be doing things like checking foreign key relationships, exploiting constraints and triggers, doing type checking. These are things that are not possible today with the existing database, and so by checking these things online, or inline, I should say, during normal database operations, if there is a problem that occurs, it would be detected very quickly or immediately, and then corrective action could be taken generally without having to take the server offline. So we expect that availability would be greatly improved. Then additionally, there is a high availability option available for DB2 for customers who choose to go that route. So lots of potential here for improving the availability. If we go on to slide 7 now, this talks about database backup, which does tie in with availability. And the capabilities that will be available with DB2 for database backup are described here. As is done today with the current database, there will be a backup operation to sequential media. Typically, that's tape, but it could also be sequential disk. And there will be the same kinds of backups as exist with the current database. There will be a full backup, there'll be incremental, and there'll be snapshot backups as we have today. And then additionally, there will be a new type of backup, which is a differential backup, and that would be cumulative changes since the last full backup. So instead of having three types of backups, there will actually be four types of backups. If we go on to slide 8 describes some of the enhancements with regard to scalability. This has always been something that's been of interest and sometimes of concern to our customers in that they want the TSM server to be more scalable, and that kind of falls into a couple of different areas. One is how many objects can be stored on the TSM server, and that relates to how large the database can grow and still be functional and operational. And then the other thing is the amount of concurrency that can be supported. DB2 will improve scalability in both regards. With regard to the number of objects, TSM today has an absolute architectural limit of about 500 gigabytes is the largest the database can get. But in fact, most customers limit the database to a much smaller size. We have customers that may limit their database arbitrarily to 50 or 80 gig or 100 gig. We have customers that are running successfully at 2 or 300 gig, but it does approach a limitation as we get up into that range. With DB2, the database can get much larger, and we don't know what the limit is going to be, just like there's really not a hard limit today, but we expect that it will be quite a bit larger than is available today with a proprietary database. So customers today who may limit their database to, say, 200 gig may be able to go much larger than that when they go to DB2. The other aspect of scalability has to do with the amount of concurrency that's supported. And today, one of the limitations with the current database is the maximum size of the recovery log, which is limited to 13 gig. And we do sometimes have customers whose recovery logs fill, and that can cause the TSM server to go down. With DB2, instead of having this 13 gig maximum, the maximum is actually 256 gig. So it is much, much larger, and we expect that there will that then the recovery log can be much larger, and therefore there can be much greater potential for concurrent operations. If we go on to slide 9 talks about performance and resource utilization, and those two things go together, improving the performance and also and without greatly increasing the resources required, kind of go together. In the first release, our goals are rather rather conservative. Our goal is really that DB2 performance should be at least equivalent to that with the proprietary database for the major operations that customers use the most, such as backup and restore and expiration and storage pool backup and that sort of thing. We expect that for some operations, the performance will probably improve, but we are trying to at least maintain comparable performance. And, of course, we don't want to do that at the expense of a significant increase in resources. We have worked very long and hard at achieving this goal, and you might think that it's just a matter of dropping in a new database and it runs, but, in fact, the TSM server has been optimized over a period of 14 or more years for use with the proprietary database. And so as we replace that database, we're finding that many changes have to be made in the TSM server code to change it so that it is optimized for use with DB2. And we've seen an enormous improvement in the performance over this period of time. We focused initially on incremental backup and found that the backup performance was much worse with DB2. And as we've optimized the server for use with DB2, we now find that it has better performance with DB2 than with the proprietary database. And so we're going through similar efforts with the other operations to try to tune the algorithms and tune the performance so that we can get at least equivalent performance with DB2. Okay, let's go on now to slide 10. Slide 10 is actually the first of several slides having to do with administration. And on this slide, we'll focus on Unix, Linux, and Windows. So basically all of the TSM server platforms except ZOS. And one of the goals here is that we, you know, customers sometimes ask, am I going to have to go out and hire a DVA in order to administer TSM once TSM begins using DV2? And the answer to that is no. We expect that there will be customers who have DVAs and will want to use those skills, but our goal is that that not definitely not be a requirement. And in fact, what we want to do is we want to hide the database very much like it is done today with the current database, so that the TSM administrator would perform operations using the TSM administrative interface, and that would allow them to manage the database without having to directly handle the database or to have DV2 skills. So they would be able to do things like expand the database or perform backup and recovery and things like that in a similar manner to what they do today. Taking this a step further then, the goal is really to package and install DV2 along with TSM. So there'll be a common install that will install TSM server, it'll install DV2, it will install any other components that are needed. And then, as I say, the TSM administrative interface would actually be used for managing those database operations. Now, there will be some changes to specific commands, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but we don't expect that the commands, that the overall administration will be more complex, and in fact, in many regards, it will be simplified because DV2 offers capability for automated administration. Now, if we now look at slide 11 talks about administration with ZOS, which is just a little bit different. Again, the goal is that there would not be a need for a DBA, but the model will actually be a little bit different and will actually fit that we have heard from most customers who run TSM on ZOS, in that instead of having the database embedded in TSM, which in fact is not even an option since there's not an embeddable form of DV2 for ZOS, the database will be installed as a separate instance and then the TSM server would actually use DV2 as a database application. Customers may want to have their normal DB2 administrator continue to manage DB2 for ZOS, or they could have their TSM administrator do that. But as we have talked to ZOS customers, this is a model that they are comfortable with and familiar with already. And again, we'll continue to there will be some changes to the commands, but we don't expect that to become more complex. And over time, DB2 on ZOS will tend toward greater self-administration. So TSM will be able to benefit from that trend. Now, if we go on, let's look at slide 12. Slide 12 is meant to just show, as an example, expected changes to some of the commands and options. And it may look really quite overwhelming because there's a very long list here. So we want to get the message out that, yes, there will be changes, that will require some awareness and perhaps some changes to scripts or whatever or to automation, but in a lot of cases this is simplification. So let's just go through, we won't go through the list of commands, but there's a pretty long list on the left-hand side of commands that will be eliminated. And they'll be eliminated primarily because the various operations performed by these commands are done automatically by DV2. So these will be operations that will no longer need to be performed by a TSM administrator. There will be a few new commands. In some cases, that's just a little bit different name than for a command that exists today. So probably not significant, new effort to understand that. And then there'll be a fair number of commands that will be changed. And these commands the changes may be just a small syntax change or an option that goes away because it's done automatically by DB2, or there may be the output may be a little different. So there's a variety of reasons why the commands are changing. Now, if we go to the right-hand side and kind of look at the options in the same way, again, there will be quite a few options that will be eliminated, and there will be some new options that will be added. So the message here is that, yes, some of the externals will change, but for the most part, the changes tend to be more in the direction of simplification rather than additional, adding any complexity. But that said, customers will need to be aware of this. They'll need to plan for this, and so there'll be some effort involved in making that transition. One other thing that will come about as a side effect of this is that the analyst privilege class, which exists today in TSM, will be eliminated. So that will be one less, privilege class that the customers will need to be aware of. Going on now to slide 13. Slide 13 talks about reporting and monitoring of the database. This is not talking about reporting and monitoring for TSM operations in general, but dealing with the database. And our goal here is to preserve the external SQL schema as much as possible, and probably entirely, as a matter of fact. And the reason for that is that we want existing automation or queries that have been developed by the customer to continue to work. Now, you may be aware that today, when one does an SQL query to the TSM database, he or she is not actually querying the real database, but some virtualized tables that sort of sit on top of the database, and we expect to preserve those virtual tables so that the interface and any queries and that sort of thing that have been developed will be preserved. However, we also expect that the function will be completed. Today, the TSM database does not allow complete SQL function. There's only a subset of the functions that are supported, and by going to DB2, the complete set of SQL functions would be supported. We also expect that performance would be improved simply by using DB2's optimized query capabilities, and of course there would be compatibility with ODBC and JDBC. We expect that reporting and monitoring will be largely transparent to customers, but it will introduce some capabilities that are not available today, primarily in the area of complete SQL function. Going on to slide 14, this is perhaps the area that raises the most questions or interest or concern on the part of customers, and that is what's going to be involved in upgrading from the existing proprietary database to DB2. Now, we expect certainly that there will be some customers who maybe just decide to start a new instance of the release that contains DB2, and so they'll start with a fresh database, and there won't be any upgrade required. But there will also definitely be customers who have data that they've accumulated over a period of many years. They may have a 50 or 100 or 200 gigabyte or whatever database, and they will want to upgrade that to DB2. And so we definitely will be planning a mechanism for doing that. And there are several goals that we have. First and foremost is that this be accurate. Obviously we want to make sure that the upgrade, when it takes place, correctly transforms the data from the proprietary database into DB2. And we want this to be require as little intervention as possible, and we're very sensitive to the fact that TSM downtime is definitely an issue with most of our customers. So we'll want it to run as fast as possible to minimize downtime, but there will be some downtime involved. So how do we achieve this then? The plan is to develop an automated upgrade utility that will basically extract records from the proprietary database and load those into DB2. While this is occurring, the TSM database will be offline. And as I say, we'll want to keep that offline time as short as possible. We expect to perform extensive testing on this to the extent possible. So we'll be doing error injection. We'll be testing with as many databases as possible to make sure that this has been as well tested as possible. And at this point, let me just make a request. We have been asking for quite some time for databases from customers. If you have customers that have a database that they would be able to provide to IBM, we would like to be able to test against that. The advantage to IBM, of course, is that we get to test with as many databases as possible, and if there are any peculiarities or unique differences in that particular database, we'd like to find them as early as possible. And then the advantage to the customer, of course, is that if there are unique aspects of their database, then we get to, you know, IBM will get to detect that and make sure that it works correctly before they actually do the upgrade in production. So if there are any individuals who have customers who might be able to send their database, I can provide Tricia with the contact person of who they would need to communicate with, and there's some conditions that have to be met there, but we are interested in getting those. Also, we are having a number of early evaluation or early release programs. We are actually in the process right now of having we have an alpha version or an early release version of the of this code available. I'm sorry, not of the database upgrade, but of DB2. And we're inviting customers who participate in this program to get their hands on this early, to try it, of course, open problems if they encounter them so that we can fix them early. And so we'll have a preview, an alpha, and a beta. So we'll be doing testing with customers over the next year approximately to get this wrung out just as thoroughly as possible. On slide 15, a little bit more about the upgrade utility. As I've mentioned a couple times, the server will be offline. Data will be pulled out of the 5.5 database and then loaded into DB2. Some customers ask whether they would be able to use this as an opportunity to change their server platform, and the answer to that is no. The source and target databases are expected to be on the same platform, but not necessarily the same system. So one possibility would be to have the database, let's say, residing on an older AIX system, just as an example. The records get extracted and then could be loaded into a newer system with newer hardware, newer level of operating system or whatever, and so that would be an opportunity to change, but still within the same system or the same platform type, I should say. A couple of options for getting the data from the source to the target. One would be over a network, and then the other would be using some kind of intermediate media, such as tape. As I've mentioned before, the TSM table schema will have to be changed in order to optimize for use with DB2. That change will all take place as part of the upload operation. So that will be transparent to customers. And then, in order to reduce this upgrade time as much as possible, we're going to be exploring things like pipelining, parallel processing, everything that we can do to expedite the upgrade process, but not at the expense of accuracy. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the information about the transition to DB2. We'll go on now on slide 16. You'll see that the next topic is management of stored data. And slide 17, I'll talk just a little bit about deduplication. I'm bringing that in here mostly for completeness. Many of you may be aware that I gave quite a lengthy presentation about a month ago just on deduplication. And so I'm certainly not going to repeat that in the same level of detail, but for those who want a reminder or who perhaps did not see the previous presentation, I'll go over that briefly. The basic idea on deduplication is that it is intended to conserve space in storage, and typically that's disk storage. So on slide 17, it just shows the concept. The basic idea is that there are three sources, source 1, source 2, and source 3. And you can think of those as TSM clients, and some of the data on those three sources is unique to that source, and other data is common. And so as the data then is stored on a target system, which in our case would be the TSM server, only the unique portions of data are actually stored. And so you see here in the picture that that subfile B is stored in several different places on the source, but on the target, it's only stored one time. And the system keeps track of the fact that, that B is actually shared among different different stored objects. So how is that going to be implemented in TSM? This will actually, on slide 18, this shows at a very high level what is going to be happening in the next release of TSM. And we will have server-side deduplication. The way this will work is if there are three clients, call them client 1, client 2, and client 3, and they have three files, A, B, and C, that all have some data in common. These clients would all send their data up to the TSM server. The TSM server would analyze the data and detect which portions of the data are common. At that point, it would basically store a reference indicating that node 1 has a file A, client 2 has a file B, and client 3 has a file C, but the data on disk would only the unique chunks of data would be stored. So if these have data in common, the common chunks would be stored one time, and each of these files would reference the shared chunk of data. Now that's how that will work on disk, and specifically that will be sequential access disk. For tape, deduplicating on tape can be counterproductive, and the reason for that is that if data is deduplicated, it may be necessary to mount a large number of tapes in order to perform a restore of a single file. And so data that is stored on tape, whether it be in a copy storage pool or a tape primary storage pool, that data would be stored in its entirety without any deduplication. And that avoids the performance degradation that would occur if deduplication were performed on tape. And again, this is what is planned for the next release. Now, slides 19 and 20 go over this in a little more detail, and I've touched on many of these points. This deduplication would be for file, or in other words, sequential access storage pools only. The deduplication would take place on the server and would be tracked in the database. And that's very important because a deduplication solution is no more effective than the index or the database that's used to track the common data. And so by storing this in the TSM database, you get database backup transactional integrity and the various things that go with the TSM database. This deduplication would reduce redundancy both for identical objects on the same or different client nodes, or for data that has common portions, so in other words, subfiles that are the same. Now, the data that is stored to TSM then will be stored initially in its entirety, and then in an out-of-band manner, the TSM server will detect the duplicates, and then the duplicate chunks of data will be removed during reclamation processing. One of the advantages of doing this on the TSM server is that deduplication will work for all types of data. Backup data, archive data, and so on. So it will not depend on a specific type of client. And it will also, moving on to slide 20, it will also avoid the need for redeploying clients in order to achieve deduplication. Additionally, it will be possible to deduplicate legacy data, that is, maybe data that was stored in 5.4 or 5.5, by moving that data into a file storage pool that's been enabled for deduplication. That data would then be deduplicated. As I've mentioned, data then that is copied or moved to tape would be reduplicated to avoid the excessive mounts. And finally, there will be a lot of control. We recognize that deduplication is a very resource-intensive process. It will take CPU cycles. It will take disk I/O cycles. And so there will be the capability to control how and when those processes run so that customers can control the time of day and how long and how many processes and so on that they want to perform the deduplication work. Okay, that's all I'm going to say then about deduplication. We'll move on to slide 21. This talks about something that is not planned in the next release, but it's something that we'd like to do in a future release. And so I'm just getting this out now. Some of you may have customers that ask about this, and so I'd like to make you aware of it. This is something we have wanted to do for some time. Today, of course, TSM offers the capability for export-import. That can be done over a network where the source server just sends data to the target server. But ideally, the way this would be performed, at least in some scenarios, would be that if data is already on media, that media would be transferred to the target location and used by the target server, and the only information that would have to be transferred would be the metadata. Now, it sounds like that would be a pretty straightforward thing to do, but it's actually more complicated than one might initially think. But this is something that we would like to do. And this would be especially attractive, let's say, in shared libraries where there are multiple TSM servers using the same library, and perhaps for load balancing, the administrator wants to move data from one TSM server to another TSM server, and with this they would be able to do that by simply having the tapes be assigned to a different TSM server without actually having to transfer all the data. This may also be attractive as DB2 becomes available, because there may be customers who want to use this in combination with upgrading to DB2 or consolidating their servers because of the greater scalability offered by DB2. So we would like to be able to offer this capability. Unfortunately, it won't be in the next release, but it will certainly be considered for a release, for a future release. Slide 22 talks about expiration enhancements. Expiration is one of the things that can be pretty time-consuming on the TSM server, and so we're going to be enhancing this in the next release to provide greater control over this operation. So we expect to add the capability for expiration for an individual node or group of nodes or a policy domain, or to be able to specify only that certain types of data would be expired. And so that would allow the administrator to control what and when, what expiration takes place and when it takes place. Additionally, there will be greater parallelism. So today, it may be limited to a single process. In the future, one might be able to run this with multiple parallel processes, and the administrator would be able to control the amount of parallelism and the amount of resources that are used for expiration processing. Then additionally, we'll be putting out, the TSM server will be putting out statistics, more statistics to allow the administrator to analyze expiration and where the processing time is being consumed. Slide 23 talks about another enhancement that is not planned for the next release, but would be in a future candidate, we hope. And this involves kind of an improvement or a different variant of the simultaneous write that exists today. Today, with simultaneous write, data gets written to the primary storage pool and simultaneously is also copied into a copy storage pool. This is a variant on that in which data would be stored initially to a disk storage pool, and then as it is migrated to tape, it would simultaneously be copied to a copy storage pool. Now, this is something that some of our customers have asked for, and the rationale behind it is they have a hard time completing all their back-end administrative operations within a 24-hour day. And so by doing this, this would allow the operations of migration and storage pool backup to be combined so that they would be essentially a single time window that would use for both of those operations. Okay, that brings us to the end of items relating to management of stored data. Slide 24 indicates that the next topic will be improved administration. If we look at slide 25 then, the next couple or three slides talk about the administration center. We recognize that the admin center has been an area of dissatisfaction for many customers. On the other hand, we have customers who are very happy with it, and a lot of that depends on perhaps on the experience or the background or the level of maturity or experience that the customers have with TSM. So several things are going to be done to improve the admin center in the next release. And I want to point out here that beginning with the next release, the release that we're currently calling 6.1, that name is confidential, we expect that the admin center will be the only graphical interface provided by TSM for administration of the TSM server. Specifically, what that means is the web admin that was available years ago and still continues to be made available as is, that interface will no longer be workable. It won't work in the next release. So customers will have to plan to move to the administration center or use the command line, or some customers have other third-party products that they may use for administration. So what is being done to improve the admin center in the next release? Several things. First of all, from an infrastructure standpoint, we will go to a new version or a different version of Integrated Solution Console, also known as ISC. This version is much more lightweight, and so it will reduce the footprint of ISC and will allow faster installation. Associated with that will be a number of things that will improve the responsiveness of the admin center. So it will be faster to load pages, large queries will process faster, and so the overall experience with the admin center will be one that makes it feel like it's much more responsive than it is today. So those are improvements to the infrastructure. And we feel that without such improvements, the admin center really is not going to be satisfactory for many customers. Then additionally, we want to improve the look and feel and the navigation and the other things that actually constitute the experience that customers have with admin center. And these are described or summarized on slide 26. There will be enhanced navigation. So some of the tasks that customers perform frequently, primarily those involving client nodes, will be much easier to get to. So there'll be much fewer mouse clicks required to get to those node operations. We've heard that customers often, have to perform operations of registering nodes on a pretty frequent basis, and so rather than require them to do that from scratch each time, there will be forms that will be can be created with the values used for those nodes, and then those forms can be saved and then reused again to minimize the effort in creating new nodes. Recognizing that some of the customers that are most pleased with the admin center are those that are new customers. They're not familiar with it, and then others, more experienced customers, don't feel like it meets their needs. We will have both basic and advanced dialogues. And we'll begin that with the maintenance plan, and that over time will become more and more the trend if that's well received by customers, so that customers who are new to the product have something that leads them through. It's simplified. It makes their job of learning the product easier. For those that are advanced and very experienced, they will have an interface that better suits their needs. For enterprise configuration, we'll show the relationships between managing and managed servers. There'll be enhancements to the health monitor and a number of other changes related to health. So this is not meant to describe everything that will happen in the admin center, but it gives you an idea that there are changes that will be taking place. Now, going on to slide 27, this is just an example form for node registration to kind of give you an idea of what that will look like. As I mentioned, one would be able to start the form and fill in the values and then save that information, and so information that it avoids re-entering the same information over and over for each node. Now, if we go on to slide 28, slide 28 talks about a new area that we will be moving into or making significant enhancements, and this is in the area of reporting and monitoring. Don't confuse this with the reporting and monitoring of the database itself. This has to do with reporting and monitoring of TSM server activities in general. I'm sorry, TSM activities in general. And the goal here is to provide an improved capability for historical reporting and operational monitoring, and we want to do that out of the box. The goal is not to compete with third-party products that specialize in this, but to give something out of the box that customers can use if they choose to without having to go to a third-party product. There'll be a graphical representation, so customers will be able to see trends and current status. And we'll be able to do this over time. It will be merged with the admin center, so there'll be a common interface both for the administration center and for reporting and monitoring. Now, we recognize that there are all different scalability requirements, so the intent is that this would be usable for just a single TSM server, or it would scale very well to work with a very large number of TSM servers. One of the attractive features of this reporting and monitoring approach is that there will be out-of-the-box or canned reports that will be available, and I'll list those in the next couple slides. But it will also have a component called BIRT, B-I-R-T, that is an open-source component that will allow reports to be customized. So customers who choose to do so can customize or create their own reports and use those. Slide 29 shows the overall architecture. And it may look a little bit complicated. We'll probably want to simplify this diagram a bit, but let me help guide you through it. In the lower left-hand corner, we see the TSM server. And the TSM server will run as it does today. It will have a database, and it will have an activity log. And then also running on that machine will be something called an ITM agent. And that will be a specialized agent that will run on the TSM server machine and will collect information from the TSM server and send it to an ITM component, which is shown in the box to the right. That ITM component would typically run on another machine, but it could also potentially run on the same machine as the TSM server. That ITM component will store data into a data warehouse, which will collect information for long-term historical analysis. Now, in the past, Tivoli has had something called a Tivoli Data Warehouse. This is something with the same name, but it is different. Don't confuse that with the data warehouse of several years ago. So information gets stored in the warehouse for historical reporting. And then by use of these BERT reports that I mentioned, reports can be generated. They can be displayed in a number of different formats. And monitoring data can also be displayed using a product or component called TEP, Tivoli Enterprise Portal. So this overall then provides the capability for being able to get historical reports, for being able to display report information graphically, and for being able to customize the reports according to customer needs. Now, slide 30 shows a list of predefined reports. I'm not going to go over those. Those are just meant to illustrate that there will be client reports and server reports. And these are the reports that we think will be of greatest interest to customers and are comparable to what some of the competitive products offer. Then there will be on slide 31 a set of monitoring, predefined monitoring capabilities that will allow real-time monitoring of events primarily on the TSM server. Now, beginning on slide 32, there are some examples of what some of these reports may look at. So slide 32 then shows backup currency of TSM clients. And it's just a pie chart that shows for the different clients how many have been backed up, say, in the last 24 hours or 48 hours, so an administrator can get an idea of how current the backups are. And then they can drill down and look at individual nodes to find out which are the ones that are not getting backed up. Slide 33 shows server throughput, which illustrates the amount of activity taking place for various background server operations over time. So this would be things such as client operations, backups, for example, expiration, migration, and so on. So be able to see what the usage of TSM is over time. Slide 34 shows also a time view, but this is focused on resources, primarily disk usage, tape usage, and database size, and show over time how those resources change. And so an administrator would be able to look at this and see how the usage was changing and perhaps forecast the need then for additional resources. Okay, that brings us to the end of the administration topic. Slide 35 indicates that the next topic will be security and compliance. Oh, and I don't know if I mentioned that before we go on, the reporting and monitoring, this is planned for the next release. So that would be the next release after 5.5. But we do expect to come out with a technology preview of that, and that will be probably in the first half of next year. And actually would work for releases, for existing releases. So if you have customers that are interested in getting an early look at this, that may be possible. We can't make any commitments right now as far as the time frame on it, but look for this in the early part of next year. Okay, slide 35 will begin security and compliance. So on slide 36, this talks about some proposed enhancements for authentication. As you probably know, today TSM stores passwords in the TSM database. They are encrypted for security reasons, but the passwords are stored there, and then at the time a client or an administrator or whatever tries to connect with the TSM server checks the password and compares the passwords to make sure that, to complete the authentication. With this enhancement, there would be an alternative form of authentication in which there would be an external directory that would actually store the passwords and perform the authentication. So this external directory could be something like LDAP or Tivoli Access Manager. And it would not replace the existing mechanism, but just provide an alternative for those customers who want to have an external directory used throughout their enterprise. Additionally, this would provide the capability for enforcement of stronger password rules. So TSM has a number of rules today for passwords, such as the minimum length and so on, but this would involve or allows stronger rules, such as there must be a minimum of, you know, two numeric characters or whatever, or passwords could not be reused, within a certain period of time. Slide 37 just summarizes the privilege classes that exist in TSM. You may notice that the analyst privilege class is missing from that here, and that's because it will go away with the DV2 release. The next two slides then talk about some potential enhancements that involve authorization using those privilege classes. By authorization, I mean an administrator coming in and attempting to perform an operation. The TSM server always checks to make sure that that administrator is authorized for a delete file space or whatever the particular operation is. Today, that's done by checking the authorizations or the privilege classes for that administrator in the TSM database. And in the future, we would be looking at doing that using an external engine such as LDAP or Tivoli Access Manager. And the idea would be that a resource definition would be stored that would correspond to the privilege classes today, and then there would be a mapping of each administrator to the permissions that they would have. And so this doesn't really change the rules that exist today, but it will allow that to be performed outside of TSM and instead done by an external authorization engine. This would be of interest to customers who are trying to standardize such authorizations on a particular engine. Now, once we do what's shown on slide 38, it's a step towards slide 39, which is the ability to customize those authorities. So with the additional enhancement on slide 39, it might be possible to, say, have a special administrative class for an individual administrator. So perhaps one wants that administrator to perform most policy actions but not be able to, say, delete a file space, or they want them to have some of the storage operations and some of the policy operations but not others. So these authorities then could be customized, and that would be done by changing the definitions that are stored in the external engine. And that gives then greater flexibility for being able to set up policy rules according to the needs of the individual customer. Now, all of the three things that I've talked about having to do with authentication and authorization, these are candidates for future releases, so we will not see those in the next release. I'll go on now to a couple of items that we refer to as historical audit trail. These also are candidates for future releases. Slide 40 shows an audit trail for individual objects. And what this would involve is when an object or a file, database, whatever, gets stored to the TSM server, detailed information would be collected about that, that store. So when was the object stored? Who initiated it? How did it get stored? Was it a schedule or whatever? Where did it get stored? Did it come in via land free or over the network? Is it encrypted? And so on. All this detailed information about the object. And then throughout the life of the object, additional operations on that object would be collected and stored. So, for example, if someone attempts to recall that object or to retrieve it, and is not authorized to do so. That would be captured. If somebody deletes it, so there'd be an audit trail. If a critical object got deleted, it would be possible for one for someone to go back and check and find out who deleted the object and at what time they did it, and if there was some malfeasance or something going on, it would be possible to determine who did that. And so it would basically track new information about the object as it gets moved through the hierarchy. It would store the new storage locations. If the management class were changed, it would be possible to track that. So it would be basically everything about that object during the life of the object. Now, if we go on to slide 41, then, this shows another aspect of the audit trail, and that is storing more information about server configurations and changes to the TSM, and I mean here TSM server configuration. So today, for example, if one, it's possible to go back and see that a schedule was changed, say 2 weeks ago, but it's not possible to tell what changes were made to it. So with this, constructs such as schedules and storage pools and so on would be tracked over time, and one could go back and find out who made what changes at individual points in time. So if someone, say, made a change either inadvertently, by mistake, perhaps did so attempting to, delete data improperly, so if there was a deliberate attempt to do something that they shouldn't do, one would be able to go back and find out what changes were made and by whom and on what date. Additionally, we would be able to do this for things like set commands or changes to TSM server operations. So this would, or options, I'm sorry. This would provide then the capability to see how the server definitions changed over time and to be able to do this for audit purposes. Slide 42 is then the summary. We've gone through all the topics I wanted to cover. We've covered a number of different areas, and I hope this has been useful to you. At this point, what we'll do is we'll open it up to questions. So, Amber, if you would do that, we'll take questions, and I'll try to answer as many of them as I can.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically today. To ask a question, simply press your star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Once again, that's star 1 for questions or comments. And again, we'll pause for just a moment. We'll first hear from David Reedy.
Hi, Dave. Just had a couple of quick questions. What kind of performances would be expected for a database restore? Are we looking at roughly the same kind of time we're looking at now, or would there be increased performance for that?
So the question, I guess everybody can hear the same question that I can, so I don't need to repeat it. We don't really have data on that at this point. I think at this point we should assume that it's comparable to what we have today, but don't have further data. I mean, one of the questions that's come up would be whether it would be possible to have multi-threaded backup and restore. And that doesn't really come for free with DB2 necessarily, but that would be something we'd be looking at, and so that might be a potential to increase the, or let's say reduce the amount of time for the database restore.
Okay. And then my other question was for the enhancements to expiration. Do you know if there are any plans for a server-side expiration of DB2 objects or API objects, or would that still be on the client?
Oh, that wouldn't be changing. I mean, that would be what exists today.
Well,
if I'm understanding your question.
Right now, for example, if you do a backup of DB2, the objects can only be expired at the client side.
Right, manually. Right.
Manually.
Side. Yeah, yeah.
Would there be any changes to that, or
no plans at this point to change
okay.
that?
Okay, that's all I had. Thanks very much.
Very good, thank you.
Once again, star 1 for questions. We'll now hear from William Ng.
Yes, this is William. Thank you for your presentation. I have a question about your slide 23 about simultaneous migration and storage pool backup.
Uh-huh.
As far as I know, the current version is able to do a LAN backup and back to a primary storage pool and to the copy pool at the same time. What does it difference than your proposed enhancement?
I guess I'm not understanding your question. So today, what this shows is that data would simultaneously be migrated and backed up to the copy storage pool. So if you've got data stored on disk and now it is migrating to tape, it would be read from the disk and it would be written out to the next storage pool and also written out to one or more copy storage pools. And that doesn't exist today.
Oh, okay. And my another question is that, okay, right now many of our customers like to use the disk pool as a data storage when they do a send backup. Okay, because
I'm sorry, when they do a what?
A LAN-free backup.
Oh, LAN-free, okay.
Yeah, okay. But as far as I know, this is using the Synergy. But
uh-huh.
I know that Synergy right now is kind of phasing out. Will this simultaneous migration and storage pool backup be able to fill in that gap?
No, this is really intended for something different. Let me address, you actually touched on several things. So let me first talk about the what's on this slide. This takes place after data gets to the TSM server. So it has nothing to do with whether LAN-free or LAN-based, say, backup is used. So the data is already, on slide 23, the data has already been stored in a storage pool, disk storage pool, and regardless of how it got there, LAN-free or LAN-based, and then during the migration, it would simultaneously be written to one or more copy storage pools.
Okay.
So totally independent of that. Now, to address your comment then about LAN-free to disk, there's really two different capabilities available today. One is with SAN file system, and that has been stabilized, and customers can continue to use that if they have that, but it's really stabilized. Then there is Synergy, and that I think you said that was going away, which isn't exactly true, but it is perhaps not being maintained real currently as far as new operating system levels and that sort of thing. But there's no intention at this point of it going away that I'm aware of. The one thing that we are doing to enhance that is that in the next release, we are planning to add support for GPFS so that you could have sequential access storage pools on GPFS and be able to do LAN-free backups to those GPFS storage pools.
Yes, but my customer are all on Windows, and GPFS is on AX or Unix. And
yeah,
one
look,
of the
look
key
for
questions is that the Windows is moving to 64-bit. And it's stabilized, so there is no further development on the 64-bit client, so they kind of a little bit get stuck there.
You're talking about on GPFS or the TSM clients?
On the Synergy or the on the Synergy client on Windows platform.
Yeah, okay, so we're getting kind of specific now. I don't want to go down, get real too specific for this one customer, but basically GPFS is looking to add support for Windows, and as TSM adds that support, that would be a possible avenue.
Okay, so I should redirect the customer to use GPFS?
Well, how about, we're getting really detailed on one customer then. So could you send a question to Tricia and we can explore that further depending
okay.
on the needs and the configuration of that customer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll now hear from Nigel Miller.
Hello, this is Nigel Miller in the UK. I enjoyed the presentation. I think it's actually very interesting. The reporting requirements, I know I get asked about this quite a lot. What I was wondering with these reporting requirements is, the reporting enhancements, are they aimed at helping compliance with particular sets of regulations, or are they just sort of things that somebody thought was a good idea? The two particular ones I get asked about quite a lot are Sarbanes-Oxley and FDA.
Well, I would say that there's no particular intent to achieve compliance with these.
No.
It's more of a competitive thing that, TSM, of course, constantly upgrading and doing things to have competitive function, and that's really what this is intended to do. Will it help with some regulatory requirements? Yes, perhaps, but it's not specifically being targeted for any particular requirements.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And moving along, we'll now hear from Alan DeWitt.
Dave, any time frames that you can speak to yet regarding technology preview, beta program? Are we 3 months away, 6 months away?
For what?
For any activity like that, beta program?
Okay. I mentioned a couple, so let me just kind of collect the, you know, go over that here. I mentioned two. One is that the next release, which confidentially is called 6.1 and will be shipping at the end of 2008, that is actually in an early ship program right now. So if you have a customer, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say it's selective, but it's, you know, I mean, customers who want to sign up to participate to do that may do that, and it is out today. Not in its entirety, of course, since it's still more than a year from GA, but they will be able to get their hands on DB2 and see how that works, and then over the next 6 months or so, that function will be rounded out. So one of the slides, I think, mentions a technology preview, an alpha, and a beta, and those will be rolling out over the next, over the coming months. I'd suggest if you do have a customer that you think that would be a good match for, you might send an email to Tricia, and we'll make sure that she has the information on who to connect up with on that. Then the other thing I mentioned is on reporting and monitoring. That is scheduled for next, you know, for the next release, but we do expect to come out with a technology preview on that early next year.
That answers my question. Thanks.
Okay, great.
Daniel Thompson has our next question.
Hey, Dave. I'm just asking about the final process where you say you're going to have a lot more tracking of when objects are stored and where they're stored.
Uh-huh.
In that slide, you said that you were going to track the initial storage pool and the volumes.
Uh-huh.
And then for later operations, move and copy operations. Does that include reclamation?
Yes. That would be the intent.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Basically, you know, again, the intent is to kind of show cradle to grave, or even after the grave, after the object's been deleted, you know, where has it been, and, you know, where it's been stored and who's touched it and that sort of thing.
I know several of the energy companies require that, especially if they have any nuclear power plants. They have to show exactly where different objects are stored at certain times, so this will be good.
Yep. And this one, unlike, you know, the question came up about reporting, which was not particularly intended for, you know, compliance, slides 40 and 41 are very much directed toward, you know, compliance and, you know, environments that have regulatory requirements. Okay?
Excellent. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Once again, that's star one for questions. We'll now hear from Durga Prakash.
Hi, it was a nice presentation, thank you. I have a question on slide 19 on deduplication. The third bullet says, reduce the redundancy for identical objects from same or different client nodes. Actually, I did not clearly understand how the database will link or keep one single file for a couple of different client nodes. Like, for example, one could be a backup file, another client's file could be an archive file with different retentions. How is this is going to be handled?
Okay. So, well, let's look at slide 18, and it doesn't really explain this, but I can use that to illustrate it. So let's suppose, as an example, that files A and B shown on slide 18 are exactly the same.
Okay.
So there's client one has maybe a backup file, client two has an archive file, and they're really the same file. What will happen then is that the server will detect, it will go through and it will figure out which portions of the file are the same, and in this case, in this example, all portions will be the same, and so it will store just one instance of those common chunks or subfiles, and then the database will point to the location of those. So the database will show that client 1 has file A and that client 2 has file B, and will know that one is a backup and one is an archive, but actually pointing to the storage, they will both point to the same location.
Okay, and when they delete the file, what happens? They just remove the link?
Right, it will remove the link, and then, of course, the storage will not go away as long as there are any links to that storage.
So until the last retention is met, the file will be retained.
Correct.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And no further questions. Mr. Cannon, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any closing or additional remarks, sir.
Okay. Well, gee, there weren't too many questions on that. I thought there would be some more, and that was why I thought, and we had one case where we got kind of detailed about one customer. I thought maybe we'd want to leave time for other questions. But anyhow, well, thank you very much for everybody's attendance and participation. I hope this has been useful to you. If you have follow-up questions, I'd ask that you direct those to Tricia, and she'll either answer them or go to development if need be to get the answer or make sure that you're that any questions are answered. So thank you very much again.
Great. And as a reminder, this call has been recorded, and we will post the MP3 out on both the internal and external sites. So if you do have somebody who missed the call, they can listen to it and download the slides as well. Thanks again.
And that concludes today's conference. We do appreciate your participation. Everyone have a great day.